When my wife told me she was pregnant, I smiled, but inside something flickered. A message, a name, a whisper in her sleep. That's how it started. One lie too smooth, one truth too convenient. So I did what I was trained to do. I analyzed her behavior, tracked her patterns, installed cameras, and I discovered I wasn't just being manipulated. I was part of an experiment. My wife didn't just betray me. She designed me. And now, I've rewritten the script. The only question left is, what kind of man lies to himself to survive the truth? If you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform now, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Glow. You ever feel like someone's smiling at you, but the smile isn't for you? That's what it felt like the night Camila told me she was pregnant. We were in the kitchen late. The kind of late where the hum of the fridge becomes the loudest thing in the room. She was barefoot, one hand on the marble counter, the other holding the test. It read plus. A little plus sign that should have meant everything. I should have felt fireworks. Joy. Purpose. Instead, I felt a flicker. Like a screen glitching for half a second before returning to normal. That flicker? That was the first time my mind started racing. She looked relieved. Not overwhelmed, not weepy. Just quietly glowing. Like this was always going to happen, with or without me. I'm Ethan, 35, software engineer. Behavior prediction systems, NLP, cognitive strategy design, that kind of thing. People think coding is just numbers. It's not. It's psychology, math, and mind control with better fonts. Camila, she's different. Art world. Curator of this gallery downtown that plays with sound and light like it's seduction. She used to drag me to her shows, where everything meant something else. A candle wasn't a candle. It was a symbol of colonial trauma or something. I'd smile and nod, drink her wine, watch her float through rooms like a celestial mistress. But lately, she'd become unreadable. Quiet in the wrong places. Overly warm in others. Touches with timing that felt rehearsed. That night, we had a glass of wine to celebrate. She took a sip, then hesitated. Oh wait, guess I shouldn't, she laughed. A perfect laugh, too perfect. She went to bed early. I stayed up scrolling. Nothing unusual, just Reddit threads, PS1 nostalgia clips, and an audio engineering forum I mod on the side. Then I heard her phone buzz in the bedroom. Normally, I wouldn't check. But something in me, something new cracked open. I walked in quiet. She was asleep, curled away from the light. Her phone was face down but still lit. One message on the lock screen. We can't talk like this anymore. Delete this. No name. No app icon. Just that. My chest felt cold. Like I'd stepped into a server room at work. That clean, air-conditioned deadness. Except this wasn't cooling me down. This was starting a fire. I didn't open it. I didn't need to. That one message rewired my brain. That night, I lay in bed next to her, eyes open in the dark. Her back was to me. I stared at the ceiling, counting lies that hadn't been spoken yet. My thoughts split into layers, mind racing, like an algorithm that had found a loop it couldn't exit. I replayed her words. The pregnancy announcement. Her soft glow. The way her hand trembled, not with fear or joy. With caution. And I knew something that I shouldn't have had to know. Whatever this was, it had already started without me. Mind racing. They say the worst prison is the one you build in your own head. But that's only true if the walls aren't real. And trust me, hers were. The morning after that message, Camila was back to her usual self. Hair up in that soft, loose bun she knows I like. Her robe half-tied, brushing past me with a kiss that landed just near my cheek, not on it. Clothes, but misaligned. Like everything else now. I have a gallery review with Marta later, she said, sipping tea. Might run late. Marta? That name hadn't come up in months. And Camila hated Marta, called her a clout vampire, once after a Miami show. So why lie? I stared at her like she was a beautiful painting I'd looked at for years, and suddenly noticed a flaw. One brushstroke out of place. One line that no longer made sense. I skipped work that day. Not officially. I logged in, moved some files around, checked the team Slack. But my real job that morning was building a tracking dashboard, not for a product, but for my wife. I pulled up her location sharing on Google. Still active. Amateurs forget that part. At 12:17 p.m., her pin dropped near a building downtown, nowhere near the gallery. I zoomed in. A boutique hotel. The kind with curated scent machines and no sign out front. Just a metal plaque and a valet wearing silence like armor. A chill hit the back of my neck. My fingers hovered over the keyboard. And then I acted. I installed a remote file sync tool on her Mac. Nothing crazy. Just a shadow copy upload to a private server I used for freelance NLP consulting. If she typed anything, text, passwords, email drafts, I'd see it. Was that wrong? Maybe. But what she was doing, that felt worse. At 5:52 p.m., her phone reconnected to the home Wi-Fi. She walked in like she hadn't disappeared. "Review went well," she said. "Marta wants to do a dual show." I nodded. My stomach churned. She smelled like bergamot and faint sweat. Her hair was messy in the way influencers make it look intentional. "You okay?" she asked, tilting her head. I smiled. "Just tired." "Liar. Liar." We were both lying now, synchronizing our deception like lovers dancing out of rhythm. That night, I combed through her sync data. Most files were routine. Invoices, art submissions, Pinterest boards. Then one document. Untitled. Draft format. It read, "He's not ready for this. He's too careful. Always watching. Always calculating. I think I've gone too far. But I can't stop now." The cursor blinked on the screen. No signature. No recipient. But it was her writing. I'd know her phrasing anywhere. Her use of double spaces after periods. The way she misspells calculating as calculating every time. I stared at it like it was a bomb. Not ticking. Just waiting. Sleep became a fantasy. I lay awake, listening to her breathe. Wondering how someone could sleep so soundly while hiding so much. I remembered the first time I touched her. How she looked at me like I was the safest thing she'd ever known. And now. Now I was a puzzle she was pretending to solve, while already holding the missing piece in her other hand. By 3:11 a.m., I'd made up my mind. Tomorrow, I'd buy a hidden camera. Something discreet. Something I could mount in the hallway. In the bedroom. Maybe even her studio, if I could get in. Not because I didn't trust her anymore, but because I needed to know what kind of game we were playing, and how many moves behind I really was. Shadows of justice. I used to think surveillance was about watching others. Now I understand. It's about watching yourself lose the line between right and wrong, and realizing you don't care anymore. The camera arrived at 9:46 a.m., rush shipping. Small. Motion activated. 4K, Bluetooth transfer. I mounted it behind the vent panel in our hallway. A spot no one ever looks. The next one went in her studio, slipped into a corner of a light fixture during one of her coffee runs. My hands didn't shake. Not once. My mind wasn't racing anymore. It was engineered. Precise. Cold. I was past fear. Past morality. I was a man buried in shadowed truths, digging for something solid. Something just, even if justice wore black gloves. That evening, Camila kissed me like we were still in love. The kind of kiss that says you're still mine, even if you never really were. She straddled my lap, whispering promises. Her breath warm. Her body magnetic. She moved with intention. But something in her hips said distraction. Performance. Afterward, she rolled off, her back turned, pulling the covers over her shoulders like a wall. I watched her in silence, every detail a line of code I was rewriting in my head. At 2:03 a.m., I downloaded the first clip. Just 12 minutes long. She was on the phone, whispering. "No. I'm managing him. He doesn't know anything. He's still in his head, building things that aren't there." There was a pause. "Yes. Of course I deleted the message." Silence. Then she laughed. Laughed. It wasn't just betrayal. It was control. She wasn't afraid of getting caught. She was managing me. Like a project. Like a problem to solve. I pulled up her laptop shadow files, the ones syncing in secret. New content. A folder titled, "Audio Manipulation Test, V.3. Inside, clips of my voice. Edited. Chopped. Stitched together. Her playing with tonal range, volume, intonation. "I hurt you. I admit it. I wasn't ready. You're right to question me." It wasn't just revenge. This was preparation. She was building a synthetic confession of me. For who? A lawyer? A lover? The world? My heart didn't pound. It froze. I sat back in my office chair, lights off, watching the server screen glow against my face. Behind me, our apartment was quiet. Camila was asleep. My hands rested on the keyboard. She thought I was careful. She had no idea how far I could go. By morning, I had a new project. Phase 1, isolate her behavioral patterns. Phase 2, predict her deception techniques. Phase 3, reverse engineer her audio manipulation. This wasn't marriage anymore. This was psychological warfare. And I had home field advantage. I labeled the file, Shadows of Justice, Case Notes, because justice in this house would not come in daylight. The server room. The problem with betrayal is that it doesn't just make you question them. It makes you question you. Was I protecting myself? Or engineering a collapse? It was nearly 3 a.m. when I returned to the office. Not because I was behind on code, but because I needed access to something our team wasn't supposed to touch. The Black Node. An experimental behavioral AI project hidden deep in our architecture. An unsanctioned lab built for psychological exploration, using real-time voice and behavior mapping. I'd helped build it 3 years ago before we shelved it for ethical standards concerns. Funny thing about ethics. They're great until they stand in the way of truth. I bypassed the admin firewall and slid my keycard into the biometric reader. The server room door creaked open. Cool air wrapped around me like guilt. Inside, rows of server towers blinked like sleeping gods. My fingers flew across the console. Root access. Backdoor protocol. Alpha layer clearance. I wasn't looking for system logs. I was looking for audio patterns. Voice prints. Behavioral profiles that matched two voices. Mine. And Camila's. I didn't expect a match. I got 5. The files weren't marked clearly. Just timestamps, user IDs, and metadata tags like audio persuasion, NLP layering, emotional stress peaks, true body intelligence, session 03. One file name chilled me. Control subject, Ethan, case point 97. I clicked. Headphones on. Her voice came through first, soft, low, deliberate. He's high functioning, emotionally dependent. Craves structure. Watch what happens when you apply cognitive inconsistency. Delay validation. Then reward. He will bend. Pause. Let's log the next reaction cycle. Watch the inflection in his voice drop. That's the breaking point. Then my voice. Not live. Recorded. Used. Manipulated. I wasn't her partner. I was her subject. My knees buckled. I sat hard on the floor, the whir of servers filling the space where my identity had been. Camila hadn't just betrayed me. She had studied me. Mapped my psychology like a terrain she could exploit. This wasn't love gone cold. This was behavioral warfare engineered from the start. I stumbled out of the server room like a man just released from prison, except the door was still wide open, and I knew now. The real prison was built for me. My mind, my trust, my reactions, everything I thought I controlled, was part of her design. By sunrise, I was back home, sitting in the kitchen, staring at the coffee machine like it might confess something. Camila walked in wearing my hoodie, smiling. Long night, she asked, her voice syrup smooth. I nodded. Yeah, work. Anything important? My jaw clenched. My lips smiled. Yeah, actually, I think I found what I was looking for. Celestial Insights. The gallery was a cathedral of silence and light. Camila's latest exhibit, Celestial Insights, was an immersive installation about intimacy, power, and perception. At least that's how the invitation described it. To me, it felt like a confession. A message wrapped in art, coded for those who knew. And I knew. I arrived late, dressed in black, unshaven, wearing a calm I didn't feel. The moment I stepped inside, I realized. This wasn't art. This was warfare wearing makeup. The first room was lined with mirrors, each distorted slightly. Some cracked. Each one had an audio track playing on loop. Love is what we believe it to be. Until belief breaks. Another whispered. Control is the most seductive lie we sell each other. Every quote, every reflection, it was us. Me and Camila. Fractured. Fragmented. Curated. The next room had a projection wall. Surveillance footage flickering like it was found footage from a relationship falling apart. It looked like someone else's life. Until I saw the frame of our hallway. The exact angle where I'd installed the hidden camera. My mouth went dry. Then I saw him. Tall. Athletic. Well-dressed. Leaning casually near the back wall. Andre. I didn't know it was him. But I knew. The ease in his stance. The distance in his eyes. Like he already owned what he was watching. He and Camila weren't talking. but when she passed him, her hand brushed his wrist. A flicker. Just like the one I'd seen the night she told me she was pregnant. My vision narrowed. I moved fast, not to confront him, but to observe. He turned and disappeared through a curtain marked X's and O's. Inside, the room was dark, lit only by a projection of a fetus in slow motion. Heartbeat amplified through surround sound. On the wall, looping text in red serif font. This child is a symbol of betrayal, of ownership, of truth rewritten. I was shaking, but not with rage, with clarity. This wasn't just a manipulation experiment. This was a trap for me, a stage to see how I'd react. The projection shifted. Now it was a video of me, sleeping, breathing, whispering in my dreams. Overlaid audio, distorted, my voice muttering. Is the baby mine? The audience gasped. They thought it was art, but I knew it was stolen surveillance. Camila had taken my most private moment and put it on display. When I finally left the exhibit, Camila met me at the door, still wearing black, hair pinned in a way that exposed her throat like a weapon. You came, she said. I had to. She tilted her head. What did you think? I stared at her, calm on the surface, volcanic underneath. I think it was a confession dressed as installation. She didn't blink. What if it was a message? A mirror. I broke the mirror, I said. Now I'm looking behind it. Her smile was subtle, but it cut. That night, I opened a new folder on my encrypted drive. Operation Celestial Deceit. This wasn't about discovering the truth anymore. It was about rewriting it. She thought I was in her maze. She didn't realize I'd been drawing the map. The audio confession. Dinner was my idea. Not because I missed her, but because the battlefield needed to look domestic. Polished wine glasses. Candlelight. Playlist set to a mellow jazz station Camila liked when she wanted to pretend everything was fine. She wore red. Slit to the thigh. Bare shoulders. Her eyes watched me like a lion watches a familiar zookeeper. Polite, but alert. I cooked. She praised it. We smiled at each other across the table like lovers still trying. But under the table, my leg bounced. My mind raced. The flash drive in my pocket burned like a loaded gun. We didn't talk much through the main course. She spoke in half-truths. Galleries gaining traction. Thinking of a solo show. Baby's been moving more. Her voice was liquid calm. Her tone, perfectly tempered. No fear. No guilt. No cracks. Until dessert. I cleared the plates, returned with a wine bottle, and said, "There's something I want you to hear." Her expression didn't change. "Is this about your new playlist?" she asked, a tease behind her eyes. "No," I said, pressing play. The voice that came through the speakers was hers, but not. Too honest. Too broken. Too real. I should have told him. It wasn't about love. It was about control. I lied. I wanted to see how far I could push him before he broke. A pause. Then, the baby, it's not his. She didn't flinch, didn't even blink. She simply leaned back in her chair, crossed her legs, and sipped her wine. When the audio ended, the room was silent, except for the distant hum of the refrigerator, and my own pulse, drumming behind my ears like war drums. "Well," I said. She set the glass down with impossible care. "That wasn't my voice," she said. My fists clenched under the table. "It's your tone, your cadence. Your phrasing." Camila looked me dead in the eyes. "But it's what you needed to hear, isn't it?" The silence after that felt like years. Then she rose. Slowly. Deliberately. She walked to the window, fingers trailing along the back of my chair like a goodbye she'd already made. Her voice soft. "I'm not the one unraveling, Ethan." "You are." She turned. "And you're doing it so beautifully." Later that night, I watched the clip again, her reaction, my face, the flicker in her eye. She hadn't denied anything. Not really. She just absorbed it. Like she knew it was coming. Like she had already rehearsed this moment. And the scariest part? Maybe she had. I lay awake, staring at the ceiling, her scent still on the sheets. In one pocket, I had her confession, fabricated. In the other, a positive paternity test, still unopened. I didn't know which one was more real anymore. But I knew this. Truth isn't something you find. It's something you design. And I wasn't just her subject anymore. I was becoming the architect. The truth in red. The envelope was unmarked. No logo. No frills. Just white. Thin. Innocent looking. I stared at it for 43 minutes before I opened it. I had seen death notices less ominous. Inside, one sheet. Paternity confirmation, 99.7% match. The baby was mine, or so it said, but I'd seen the metadata. The technician's name, Andre K. Loron, the man from the gallery, the ghost in the mirror. The page began to feel heavier in my hand, like it was soaked in blood I couldn't see yet. That night, I didn't plan the confrontation. I didn't rehearse it. I didn't even speak until we were both standing in the living room, lights dim, our wedding photo tilted slightly on the mantle behind her like some kind of cosmic joke. Camila was brushing her hair. I watched her like someone watching a stranger's ritual. The rhythm, the calm, the elegance of someone who's never had to fear truth catching up. Then I said it. Who is Andre? She paused just long enough. Someone I used to know. Used to. I repeated, voice sharpening. She turned, brush in hand. You're not asking about Andre. You're asking if the baby is yours. I stepped forward, pulled the paper from my back pocket, held it up like a weapon. It says she is. Camila looked at it, smiled faintly. Then what's the problem? The technician's name is Andre, the same man from the gallery. A pause. So you think I orchestrated the lab results, she said softly. Had them manipulated by a lover to keep you compliant? You tell me. She walked past me barefoot. The brush dropped onto the floor with a dull thud. Then came her whisper. You want the truth? Or you want a reason to collapse? That was when I lost it. I grabbed the wine glass from the table, the one she used in Chapter 6, and hurled it at the wall. It exploded into a million sharp truths. She didn't flinch, just stared at me, like I was exactly where she wanted me. On the edge, unstable, fully hers, not in love, but in obsession. I stepped closer, chest heaving. Tell me the truth, Camila. Is this baby mine? Her eyes burned. Not with tears, with power. No, she said. Not the way you think. What does that mean? It means she's yours in the same way you've been mine since day one. She pressed her palm against my chest. You just didn't know who was writing the script. For a split second, I saw it all. The manipulation. The patterns. The gaslighting. The mirror art. The AI audio. The psychological profiling. She had built me, just like I'd built my code. And I had run exactly as expected. I grabbed the photo from the mantle and slammed it face down. This ends tonight, I said. She nodded. I know. She walked past me again, up the stairs. Calm. Elegant. Untouched by the explosion she'd just orchestrated. At the top, she turned. One day, she said, you'll thank me for teaching you who you really are. And then she disappeared into the shadows. I sat on the floor. Alone. The glass around me catching bits of moonlight like silent cameras. And I understood. The truth wasn't in the paper. It wasn't in her words. It wasn't even in the baby. It was in what she'd made me become. And there was no going back. X's and O's. Months have passed. The house is quiet now. No surveillance. No more audio files, hidden folders, or whispering behind closed doors. Just me. And the baby. Her name is Ava. She has Camila's eyes. My silence. And every time I look at her, I wonder if what I see is real, or just another story I've told myself to keep breathing. I speak at conferences now. Universities. Startups. Intelligence training seminars. My presentation is called The Psychology of Trust and Deceit, Inside the Lab of the Human Heart. They love it. They eat up the anecdotes. How social engineering mirrors relationships. How market dynamics mirror emotional volatility. How power isn't taken. It's offered by those who need to believe. They call me insightful, visionary, master of behavioral psychology. None of them know the truth. Because the truth, the paternity test, it was fake. I created it. I spliced metadata from archived files, changed the name in the system, signed it with a ghost. I needed it to be real. Not because I believed the child was mine, but because I couldn't live with the possibility that she wasn't. Truth wasn't something I found. It was something I manufactured. Just like Camila did. Only now, I do it better. I keep a box under the bed. Inside it, the original envelope. Unopened. Still sealed. The real results. Sometimes I stare at it. Think about burning it. Think about opening it. But I never do. Because real power isn't in knowing. It's in choosing not to know. And controlling the story anyway. Ava sleeps peacefully now. The mobile above her crib spins slowly. Planets orbiting a tiny, sleeping sun. She coos in her sleep. And I whisper, you'll never be someone's experiment. Camila? Gone. No trace. I heard whispers, Dubai. Prague. maybe Sao Paulo. Her Instagram stopped posting. Her last story was a quote, "Every great work of art begins with destruction." And maybe that's what she was all along. A performance piece. A virus made of silk and glances. But I was the final act. Today, I lecture on leadership influence, behavioral architecture, group dynamics, and power negotiation. But what I really teach is this. The person who controls the narrative controls the reality. And if that makes me a villain, so be it. Heroes live in stories. Villains write them.